I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
KFI AM 640. You're listening to the John Cobell Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
How you doing? We're on every day, 1 until 4. And then if you miss any part of the show, you can go to the iHeartRadio app, listen to the podcast version, John Cobell Show on Demand, same as the radio show. If you want to track us on social media, we're at John Cobell Radio. And I'm hoping that maybe by the end of the year, we will look back on April 18th and say that was the day things started to change in the state of California. And there are two big issues that the change may be beginning today. We'll see. Issue number one is it looks like a lot of people signed petitions to get a referendum on the ballot to greatly revise Prop 47. And we are going to talk now with Greg Totten. He's been with us before. He's the CEO of the California District Attorneys Association. He's the retired Ventura County DA. And it's a big announcement today because he's going to tell us how many signatures their committee was able to collect to get this on the ballot. And this would repeal, revise a good chunk of Prop 47. Greg, how are you?
I'm terrific. Today's a good day.
It is a good day. Well, tell us how many signatures you got.
Over 900,000, which exceeds even what we had projected to collect. So we are absolutely confident that this measure will qualify and be on the November 2024 ballot.
That is fantastic. That is great news. And I believe you needed 546,000. And so you shot way past that.
Yeah, we took this very seriously. And I will tell you, John, Californians took it very seriously. There was tremendous interest in signing this measure beyond the paid signature gatherers. We also had a very robust group of volunteers who probably, when it's all said and done, will have collected somewhere in the neighborhood of 40,000 volunteer signatures, which reduces our costs. So tremendous momentum going into November now.
Yeah, I know. A lot of KFI listeners showed up when we were in Orange County some weeks back. I think we had 1,300 people that day. We were at the Honda right. Center parking lot. So I was really surprised at the crowd that showed up for that in the middle of the day, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. All right. Explain to people who aren't aware, this thing, if it gets on the ballot, if it passes, How does it change things? I know it addresses three specific areas. Why don't you detail them so newcomers can understand?
First, you bet. The first area is retail theft. We restore the ability in California to prosecute people who repeatedly steal for felony. We also address smash and grabs. We have a smash and grab enhancement to address these situations like we all saw on TV involving Nordstrom's, where a group of thieves stole more than $300,000 worth of merchandise in about 90 seconds. We also have an enhancement in the theft area for people who act in concert. That's when two or more people get together to commit a crime. We know that creates more risk of harm to the public. The second component is to deal with this rampant problem of drug addiction, homelessness, and open-air drug use and overdoses. We restore the ability to compel people who have drug addiction issues into treatment by having the potential consequence of a felony conviction. Our goal is not to incarcerate them. Our goal is to get them into treatment. And Prop 47, sadly, while it sought to increase treatment and reduce jail time, it did the latter very well. But unfortunately, the incentive to go into treatment has lessened, and many of those treatment programs are really, the demand for them has dramatically declined. So this measure will encourage people with serious substance abuse issues to go into treatment. And then finally, we take a concerted and thoughtful effort to deal with traffickers, particularly traffickers who are selling poison to our children and to members of the community, namely fentanyl, that is a leading cause of overdose here in California. It is, without exception, the most dangerous drug I have seen in my 40 years as a prosecutor. So we provide for enhanced penalties for people who sell large quantities of fentanyl. We also provide enhanced penalties for people who are armed with a firearm and selling fentanyl as well as other hard drugs. That's what the initiative does in kind of an executive summary of it. But we are very optimistic that once this is approved by the voters, it will profoundly change things in California for the better.
Has any polling been done internally, maybe, about the popularity of these of this entire referendum or the specific tenets provisions?
Yes, we conducted a very broad poll in November, really at a time that there was not a lot of discussion about this issue. And what we learned from that poll is, first of all, right out of the chute, just looking at the ballot and title and summary, what people would. The only thing they read in the poll was the ballot title and summary. 70% of those polled supported it with nothing more. Once you added the issue of repeat retail theft and drug trafficking, it jumped to 89%. And then when you added fentanyl to it, the polling jumped to 94%. I can tell you the pollster told me that in 30 years of conducting such polls, there's only one other time where she saw public opinion poll results as high as she saw in our case.
The Democrats in the legislature are scrambling, trying to put together some kind of fake anti-crime package. And they're trying to fool people because you cannot revise Prop 47 except through the ballot process. You can't do it. The legislature is not permitted to do any revisions. That's correct, right?
Yes, that's largely correct, because many in leadership in the legislature have said they do not want to amend Prop 47. Prop 47, by the very plain language in the initiative itself, requires that for any increase in punishment that would be covered by the initiative, you have to go back to the voters. And thus far, the vast majority of the legislative proposals seek to do it solely through legislation, not through a ballot measure. I will tell you, the legislature does have the authority to put a ballot measure on the ballot. They have until, I think it's June 27th, to do so. But right now, there does not seem to be any willingness on their part to go that route.
Prop 47.
I will tell you the,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The coalition that is behind this, it's not red or blue. It's a bipartisan coalition. It's very broad. We have people from social justice groups, people from small business, large business, people from the faith community. Very huge and growing coalition. We stand ready to sit down with the legislature and negotiate. But to date, we have not been asked to negotiate anything. And I am not optimistic.
But just to clarify, to do what's in this referendum, you would have to give it to the voters, right? You couldn't.
Absolutely.
Okay, so no matter what you end up negotiating, this still has to end up on the ballot to get these kind of changes.
Well, and that's the key requirement. And if we can't get by that requirement with the legislature, then they're not serious about doing meaningful reform that actually improves, lessens retail theft, improves the homelessness and drug addiction issue that we've got, and deals with ethanol. And John, just to be clear, there have been no fewer than 20 proposals over the last decade to modify or amend Proposition 47 that have all been killed in committees by the legislature. So we've repeatedly tried through the legislature to change this law and have been rebuffed consistently.
All right, Greg, what's the next milestone? You've counted the signatures. You have over 900,000. What's the next step?
Well, the next step is the Secretary of State certification process. What happens, John, is every county in the state, there's 58 of those, every county that receives 500 or more petitions, signed petitions, by law must do a random sampling of those petitions to check for validation rates. Sometimes people sign these and they're not registered to vote, or they've moved, have different addresses, things of that sort. So they do a 3% random sampling and come up with a validation rate. Those validation rates from all 58 counties are then submitted to the Secretary of State. Secretary of State develops a combined validation rate statewide and runs that validation rate across the total raw count of petitions that have been submitted. If that validation rate equates to 110% of the legally required number, which is slightly more than 600,000 signatures, if we reach that amount, then it's qualified, and they don't have to individually count every single petition. And I'll just tell you, we're completely confident that that is going to be the situation in the case of the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act.
All right, Greg, this is terrific news. And please, as soon as you learn anything more about the progress, formally get it on the ballot, let us know, okay? And we'll certainly be highlighting this all during the autumn.
Thank you so much for having us. We look forward to talking to you more.
Okay, Greg Totten, he's the retired Ventura County District Attorney, CEO of the California DA's Association. Much more to discuss on this. I can't tell you, I can't stress enough how important this is. This is the biggie. And we'll get into all the details next.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
Coming up at 1:30, Mark Redelard from ABC News on the Trump trial. They lost two jurors. They gained back two jurors today. It's not easy. And Mark's going to explain what's been going on. Now, back to Greg Totten. Greg was just on last segment with us, and he is a retired Ventura County District Attorney, and he is the CEO of the California District Attorneys Association. And they are behind, along with other groups, this referendum, which looks like it's definitely going to get on the ballot. And this is an earthquake. This is huge. For 10 years, we've been telling you what a disaster Prop 47 has been. You have seen it with your own eyes. The reason for all the retail theft and the smash and grabs and a lot of the homeless people and all the drug addiction in the street and a lot of the crime is because of Prop 47. And you're going to hear a lot about it, especially on this show, because you're not going to see it in the LA Times very much. You're not going to see it on TV very much. So you got to come here to learn about what this will do, how this is going to make life better. 2014, Prop 47, that is the original sin of all the misery that we've suffered here in Southern California ever since. It really is. This was Jerry Brown excrement. And it was given a title and summary that was completely fraudulent. You know who wrote that? Kamala Harris. She was the attorney general. Bald face lie. The title and summary was about, it was called the Safe Schools and Neighborhood Act. That's what that lady wrote. The Safe Schools and Neighborhood Act. Totally wrong, to put it mildly. Yeah, what it did is it unleashed a huge wave of homelessness, huge wave of drug addiction, a huge wave of daily crime, especially retail theft, repeated retail theft by the same people over and over again, and smash and grab robberies and car thefts and burglaries and break-ins into your home. All that was unleashed by Jerry Brown and Kamala Harris. It is the single most destructive bill that I've seen in all my time in California. And I don't know of a state that had one this bad, with consequences this bad. You saw that retail theft exploded. You saw that homelessness exploded. Drug addiction exploded. They whatever they sold to us, they were wrong about. I don't even think I don't know if they really thought this would work, or this is part of the way they wanted to destabilize our state, just to destabilize our way of life. I don't know how anybody in their right mind, like Jerry Brown and Kamala Harris, could say, well, if we don't force people into drug treatment, drug use is going to go down. How's that going to work? If we stop prosecuting for retail theft, we stop making it a felony, retail theft will go down. It's ludicrous. So here's the deal. And these are the three things you need to know why this is important. This revision to Prop 47, and officially it's called the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act. It goes after serial retail theft, organized theft, smash and grabs. They become felonies. You go to prison. Secondly, drug use is now, there's a fork in the road for anyone arrested on drug charges. Either take drug treatment or go to prison. Felony. Your choice. Nobody has to go to prison. You have to take drug treatment, which is the way it used to be. We used to have felony retail theft. There was a lot less retail theft. We used to have felony drug charges for people using. We go back to that. We had a lot less drug use. All this led to a lot of homelessness. Third thing it does is, it treats fentanyl as the poison it is. It will define it as a hard drug, and people convicted of trafficking fentanyl will go to prison. 20% of all the youth fatalities in California come from fentanyl. And so drug traffickers are going to be put in prison. So it's fentanyl drug traffickers. It's drug users and possessors. Possessors have to go to drug treatment. And then the retail thieves and the smash and grab robbers, they go to prison too. Simple. And like he said, just the title and summary got a 70% approval rating. And then you add the details that it goes after retail theft and drug use, got 89% approval rating. You add fentanyl, going after fentanyl dealers, it's got 94% approval rating. This absolutely will pass, although I'm sure we're going to have to deal with an onslaught of lies from the jackasses in the Assembly, State Senate, and in the governor's office, the chief jackass. But we're up for the battle. You should be, too. We come back. We're going to talk with Mark Remillard from ABC News. The Trump trial, they lost two jurors. They gained two jurors. See where we are now.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Junie. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have
been
the podcast would have taken a left turn. Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Michael Rappaport, and my wife, Kibi Rappaport, starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
On from 1 until 4, after 4 o'clock, John Cobalt Show on demand, the podcast, and you can listen to what you missed. We're going to talk with Mark Remillard now from ABC News. Trump trial, and they're still trying to get the jurors, panel of 12, six alternates, and they started with 7, it dropped to 5. Last I heard, it's back to 7, or maybe more, or maybe less. I don't know. See, they've been having some issues. Let's get Mark on the line here, see what's going on. Mark.
Hey, guys. Hey. Hey, John.
How are you?
Hey, very good. And you know what? I'm going to give you an update right now that actually we've just gotten word that an entire panel of 12 jurors has now been sat in the case.
Wow. On my write in, it was at 7.
I mean, literally 2 minutes ago, I just got an email.
it was down to 5 earlier today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been an interesting day. We had a day of setbacks early where, as you mentioned there, we had 7 jurors seated. You needed 5 more regular panelists and then 6 alternates. And we had 2 jurors removed this morning. One was because she expressed concerns about her identity being revealed. She said that she had been notified or had some conversations with some colleagues and friends and family who had kind of expressed that they thought somebody could figure out who she was based on some of the reporting that was out there. And so she expressed concerns about that, and the court let her go. And then shortly after that, prosecutors raised concern about another juror, saying that they were concerned that he wasn't entirely forthcoming on his questionnaire, particularly when asked about whether or not he'd ever been arrested or had some criminal history. Prosecutors say, presumably after doing a background check, that they said that there was somebody with the exact same name who had been arrested in Westchester, New York, which is just north of New York City, had been arrested in the 1990s for tearing down political advertisements. And so they brought that to the attention of the court. The court ended up doing a sidebar with that juror, so we don't know exactly what was said. And we don't know if that really is the same person or not. But after that sidebar, the judge decided to let that juror go.
Well, now, do they have unlimited number of challenges to jurors, or at some point do both sides have to accept the jurors that are presented?
Yeah, so you have unlimited challenges for cause, right, which is basically where, and certainly the parties get to make a case to the court to dismiss a juror that they think has some issue. We've seen this a number of times already where perhaps a juror is up there and they're saying, you know, no, I think I can be impartial. I think I can be fair. And then maybe they've got some social media history, though. For example, we've seen that a few times where somebody's Facebook post from 2018 or something like that said some derogatory things about Trump or mean things about Trump, or maybe praised Donald Trump on the opposite end. Is the possibility there, too. And they would essentially point to that and say, look, we think this is reason for the court to dismiss this person. So whenever you have a reason like that, where it's for cause, that was unlimited. But in terms of the peremptory strikes, which is where basically you can dismiss the person for any reason, except for a few protected things, like you can't discriminate on the basis of sex or something like that. But in those cases, they had 10 peremptory challenges in this case. And going into this morning, both sides had used 6. So they only had 4 going into this morning. The court had the option to give them more, but have not heard that that's entirely what happened. And certainly we know there was a panel of about 18 or so just a few, maybe 20 minutes ago or so, and that they were reviewing that. And certainly they're both sides were trying to make a case that some of these jurors should be removed for cause. And then we get word that the panel's seated. So it must have been either that some of those were let go or not, and now we've got a panel. So really what's left to do here is now get those 6 alternates on the panel.
I have read that there's 2 lawyers on the jury, and I've always heard it said, and I don't know if it was a joke, is the last thing you want as a prosecutor or a defense attorney is a lawyer on the jury because they know too much stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think that's a common trope, and I think there might be some merit to that too. It might depend on the case, but you're right. I believe one of them. I don't have the details in front of me, but you're right. There is more than one juror on the panel that was seated that are attorneys, and I think that it just comes down to again whether or not it's a tactic, right? So if you're either on Trump's team or you're on the prosecution and you're looking at this person. And really, I think at the end of the day, do I want to try and unless there's a compelling reason that you can convince the court to remove this person for cause, and merely being a lawyer is probably not going to pass that bar. I think then you have to make the decision. Is this worth using a strike on? I only have 10. Is this worth trying to get this person off of the jury just because they're an attorney or not? And so it seems like obviously in those 2 cases that probably wasn't worth doing it. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I imagine that on the other end of things, perhaps you would look at it and say, well, this person may have the ability to look at the evidence in a certain way that we like. So I can't explain why these sides decided to let these 2 on there. But yeah, you're right. There's 2 people on the panel right now who are attorneys.
The whole thing sounds like a complicated game show.
Yeah, it's very, very complicated and very high stakes.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Mark Remillard of ABC News on the Trump jury selection. ABC this morning, let me see, at the time they published this, there were 7 jurors, and then, you know, 2 disappeared, and now they're back up to 12. And they had an outline of each juror. And this is what some of the jurors were complaining about today. Is that, hey, there's too much identifying detail in these news stories, and the judge actually scolded the media to use common sense and don't publish so much identifying information. Obviously, it wasn't names or necessarily, or their hometowns, but you could get the idea from reading these outlines. And one woman told the court that, you know, I want off. I want to go through some of this stuff. You know, it's amazing just how disconnected a lot of people are from the news. I mean, you're listening to this show, you're listening to KFI, you're probably way above average in knowing what's going on in the world. Most people really have no idea. And there's certain issues, certain events that you think is absolutely central to civilization, and you lap up every single detail you can find. These people couldn't give a hoot. Let me go through some of the jurors here. It's hard to do this when there's constant pop-ups. You know, every time I try to read off my iPad, I get lots of pop-ups and reboots. 30 years of this, and they still can't streamline the process. I love this one. Juror number 2 said she didn't realize she could be a juror in Trump's trial when she reported for duty on Monday. I didn't know I was walking into this. She's an oncology nurse. And she says she gets her news from the New York Times, CNN, Google, and Facebook. And when she was asked an opinion of Trump, I don't really have one. You know anybody who doesn't have an opinion on Trump? Let me see. This person says, oh, here we go. Juror number three, he said he was embarrassed to admit he was not familiar with all the other trials against Trump. And this guy has worked at two major law firms in New York. He's a corporate attorney, but he's not familiar with all the allegations against Trump. I'm actually not super familiar with the other charges. I don't really follow the news that closely. A little embarrassing to say. How about that? A corporate attorney. Let me see here. Juror 5 was the only potential juror who raised her hand when asked if they had ever heard of Trump's other criminal cases. The only one. All the other jurors that were selected weren't aware that he's being tried in Florida. He's being tried in Georgia. He's being tried in Washington, D.C., you know, for the insurrection crimes or the classified files or the interfering in the election. These people never heard of it, except this woman. More coming up.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
Did you see the homes that the homeless people have built along the 110 freeway, not far from the Arroyo Seco River near Highland Park? They built these pretty sophisticated small homes. And what I can't believe is the media. What was this from? It's from Channel 7. The report I'm looking at they actually seem impressed at the workmanship and the construction, and that it has its own light system and electricity. They're stealing the electricity. That's not their electricity. They're thieves. They're committing a crime right in front of the television reporter who seems impressed that the lights are working. But we're going to talk with Blake Trolley, and he's going to explain what he's seen with these makeshift homes right alongside the 110, and if anything's going to be done about it, because certainly the neighbors don't want to see this. I got just a minute or two here. The U.S. Supreme Court's about to hear a case. I said earlier in the hour that you're going to look back on April 18th and this whole week, really, as maybe the beginning of better times in California, because the rewrite to Prop 47 is very likely going to be on the ballot. They got over 900,000 signatures. I'll talk more about that next hour. So that's a good thing, because that'll make retail theft and smash and grab a crime again. It's going to make drug use a crime again. It's going to force people into treatment. It's going to make fentanyl dealing a real serious crime. But at the same time, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to hear a case that's going to have a major impact on government policy on the homelessness situation. For about 6 years now, politicians and bureaucrats have been hiding behind a Ninth Circuit appeals court decision, Johnson versus Grants Pass, Oregon. There's also a similar decision involving Boise, Idaho, where the appeals court said that it's cruel and unusual punishment to punish somebody for camping in a public space if the person has no other shelter. It violates the Eighth Amendment, the ban on cruel and unusual punishment, and has made it illegal for homeless residents. It's made it illegal for the cities to move homeless residents unless they have a room for them. Now, I could get lost in the weeds on this, but what I'm telling you based on my experience, firsthand experience with certain politicians, is they use this as an excuse to do nothing on homelessness. Nothing. Because what you could do is you could build some homeless shelters, and then you're legally allowed to move these people. What you could do is every day at 6 a.m., wake them up and tell them to move along, because the protections were only from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. That's what you could do. You can enforce law. As you can see, some cities have no homelessness sleeping around because they build shelters. It's not that expensive. It's not that hard. You don't need to give them a Ritz-Carlton room. You need to give them a bed. And as long as there's a bed available, that person has no right to sleep in public. And he only has the right to do that between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. And so the politicians, bureaucrats, especially in Los Angeles, intentionally intentionally misunderstood this law because they wanted to embrace, you know, the degradation that vagrants, drug addicts, and mental patients bring to a community, that we all must be punished for living in a capitalistic society, that we must see up close, smell up close how capitalism doesn't really work for everybody, and we must endure some of the burdens that they endure. That's what these people really believe. Anyway, the Supreme Court, I hope, is going to overturn the whole thing, and we can go back to normal life. When we come back, Blake Trolley, about the makeshift homes that some people are building along the 110 freeway and the Arroyo Seco River in Highland Park. People are really impressed with the workmanship. We're going to talk to Blake, and we've got Ashley Johnson live in the KFI 24-hour newsroom.
Hey, you've been listening to the John Cobalt Show podcast. You can always hear the show live on KFI AM 640 from 1 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday, and of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.